are listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the CBS News app.
On the Hour. Presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Wendy Gillette in New York. There are more developments in one of the federal cases against former President Donald Trump. CBS News correspondent Christina Ruffini has the details.
A Justice Department asked the judge in the January 6th case against Trump for what's called a protective order that would ban him from speaking publicly or posting on social media evidence from that case before the trial. They pointed specifically to this social media post where Trump says, "If you come after me, I'll come after you." And voiced concerns that the former president could start going after witnesses or other court officials based off the evidence they're going to give him before trial, and it could have a chilling effect on those proceedings.
Trump's lawyers asked for more time after the judge requested a response by Monday at 5 p.m. Special counsel Jack Smith then filed another motion urging the judge to quickly proceed. Trump is speaking at a dinner tonight in South Carolina. Two Orlando police officers were shot when they stopped a car in connection with a murder case. The suspect then stole a vehicle and fled. He was killed during a standoff. Chief Eric Smith.
The suspect has been identified as 28-year-old Dayton Bale with extensive violent criminal history.
A Texas judge rules the state's abortion law is too restrictive for women with pregnancy complications. KITV reporter Paige Hubbard.
The lead plaintiff in the lawsuit, Amanda Zaroski, released a statement saying, and quote, "For the first time in a long time, I cried joy when I heard the news. This is exactly why we did this." She goes on to say, "This is why we put ourselves through the pain and the trauma over and over again to share our experiences and the harms caused by these awful laws."
Dozens were arrested, including an influencer whose giveaway led to a riot yesterday in Manhattan. New York Mayor Eric Adams.
You don't come to get free Game Boys and bring smoke bombs and bring M80s and bring other disruptive items. And so we believe there were some outside influencers that may have attempted to aggravate the situation.
A massive lottery jackpot just keeps on growing.
Did you win the Mega Millions? No, you did not, because no one won.
His winning numbers are 45, 30, 52, 56, 11, and the Mega Ball is 20.
Since no one had those numbers, the jackpot has increased to $1.5 billion. Someone is going to be very, very rich. But you know what they say, you can't win if you don't play. The next drawing is Tuesday night. Linda Kenyon, CBS News.
This is CBS News.
Hire with minimal effort and max speed with Indeed. Their hiring solution platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. A new report finds almost three-quarters of young people believe gun violence is a problem in the United States. Joe Ullery reports.
Wyatt Russell with American University says this generation, raised in an era when mass shootings are common, says school safety is a major concern and is associated with negative mental health outcomes.
The average young person knows at least one other person who's been injured or killed by a gun. We've seen an astonishingly high 25% of youth have been in an active shooter lockdown, not a drill, a lockdown.
A study from the Kaiser Family Foundation also found that gun violence was the leading cause of death for kids in 2020 and 2021, the highest rate among large wealthy nations. Opponents of stricter gun laws cite concerns about personal freedom and self-defense. Russell notes the survey found that a young person's access to guns, identification with gun culture, and exposure to media relating to guns correlated with support for male supremacy, belief that the Second Amendment gives individuals the right to overthrow the government, higher levels of racial resentment and post-traumatic stress disorders.
We're working to develop some inoculation strategies to help young people stop harmful mis- and disinformation, conspiratorial thinking, and supremacist ideologies that can influence gun violence.
Researchers polled a nationally representative sample of more than 4,100 people, ages 14 to 30. I'm Joe Ullery. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
She's the newest of 7 elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. Janet Protasiewicz begins her 10-year term in August when she is sworn in. It's a longtime tradition which includes use of the court's seal created in 1848. But did you know it features the scales of justice, but not carried by a blindfolded Greek goddess? Instead, a hand holds the scales, representing justice is in human hands. It also means everything is official once the seal is stamped on any court documents. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Ball. Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Out to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocate Radio Show, broadcasted live in the Shaw today. WAUK 540 AM 101.1 FM. I got my little buddy Dominic here with me, and we've been joined by a fine host in his own regard. He is the host of Morning Cannolis. He's a former U.S. attorney. He's a friend of ours, James Santel. Welcome back to your studio. We're borrowing your place for the
I think it's your studio, and I am delighted to be with you on any day of the week, Mike and Dom.
Thank you, Jim. Always good to see you, man.
And in that I skipped lunch today, the fact that you came bearing cannolis.
Oh, I did.
You are godsend.
And so good. Those are from Gloriosa's.
They are
right?
From Gloriosa's, your old stomping grounds there on Brady Street. And they wanted me to express their greetings to you right out here in Waukesha County.
All right. So, we appreciate
cannolis
it.
Cannolis from Milwaukee into Waukesha.
Yes.
How's that?
Jim Santel, the breaking news, at least breaking to the public, is that the Biden administration has put forth another proposed let's see how the headline reads, a student loan forgiveness plan, about $39 billion. Jim, obviously the last plan ill-fated, at least when it wound its way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. They dismissed Biden's method. Was the problem the method that the Biden administration tried to utilize, Jim? And do you think this one will end up with a similar fate?
Should be able to do this. $39 billion, as you said, the student debt, about $804,000. I'm sorry, 804,000 borrowers who might be affected by this. Not nearly as broad as the previous plan was, but because this is under a different rubric, if you will, should be able to go ahead. The problem, according to the Supreme Court, with the prior constitution of this was that it was just too big and too new, and basically saying the Congress is the group that's got to do this, invokes something called the major questions doctrine, that basically says that if Congress has not acted, the president, the executive, should not do something that's colossal in nature, involves a lot of finances. And so that's the reason why they struck it down. An awful lot of people, obviously, not in favor of that decision, a 6-3 decision. But this one should resurrect at least a portion of that with respect to this. It also has to do with, again, some accounting issues, I understand, from the past, cleaning up some records, some accounting things to make certain that all these accounts are, in fact, consistent with what the debts truly are. And it will accomplish some results, some good things for some of these borrowers out there. It is plainly not the big project that the Biden administration has first proposed through the Education Department.
But, Counselor, just because you think it's legally sound doesn't mean it will not be sued absolutely in the federal courts. Because whatever this president proposes, there's a certain presumption amongst, well, there's litigation amongst Republicans. We know it's coming, Jim.
It is.
But you think this one, if I hear you, sir, and correct me if I'm wrong, I know you often do, this one you think has a better chance of standing up.
Right. Again, one of the problems that the Supreme Court identified was language underneath the act, which gave the Secretary of Education the ability to modify and amend the ways in which these accountants were taking place, did not say you could completely cancel them. Here, much closer to that, again, as I understand it, what you're doing is you're trying to do some math here to make certain the people who owe debts actually do owe these amounts. That strikes me as a truly executive kind of function, almost the kind of thing that an accountant could do. And again, absolutely, someone will run into court, probably they're already putting that complaint together as we speak, challenging this. But boy, if the Supreme Court looks at this and says you can't even administer loans and do account financing, those kinds of things, independent of judicial review, that's going to be a pretty far stretch, I think.
Yeah.
Our fun guest, James Santel. He is a former U.S. attorney. He is the host of Morning Cannolis right here on the Civic Media Network, Saturdays, 9 to 11. And Jim, I confess, I've been indulging in the Morning Cannolis on Saturday. I've been listening up at the cabin. And I hear you all across the great state of Wisconsin on Wonderful. The Civic Media Network, usually on a radio station, on the Civic Media app if necessary. But, Jim, Supreme Court rulings, there were some pretty significant rulings. And I've heard you talk about this, but for those that haven't found the joy of the Morning Cannolis yet, let's start with the last ruling on Biden's efforts to relieve student loan debt. Jim, did this feel like a meritorious ruling to you? I mean, sometimes you look and you say, I look at the progressives, the quote unquote, the Kagans, the Sotomayors, and the Ketanji Brown Jacksons, and I say, are they completely off base, or do we perhaps have conservatives finding an ends justify the means sort of ruling?
Right. And I think in this case, you've got a fundamental difference on the court, not surprisingly, 6-3, about the role of government and the role of the executive branch in particular. The decision written by the Chief Justice in this case just drips of this notion that you've done an overreach, Joe Biden, that this is not something you should do absent congressional action. Again, it's big, it's new, it's this major crimes, major questions doctrine, and only the Congress can be doing those kinds of colossal things. They've raised this before in other areas as well, including the COVID-19 business executive orders, those kinds of things. So we've seen this before, and it goes to, again, this fundamental notion, but what is government supposed to be doing? And what do you do ultimately if the Congress itself is not acting? If the Congress is not doing these things in the areas of environment and education, healthcare, commerce, all these kinds of things, guns, what is the president supposed to do who's responsible, again, ultimately for the safety and security of the country? He acts, and then the Supreme Court comes back and says, nope, you can't do that. Only the Congress can do it. But the Congress is busy passing defense bills that are never going to, you know, make their way across the Capitol Hill. So that's the challenge. I think it's a fundamental disagreement on the court about the role of government in the 21st century. And we can package it inside of language and legal doctrines, but that's where it comes from.
Jim, I believe another 6-3 ruling that affected education quite a bit, effectively the elimination of affirmative action. And although the broader ruling, my understanding, didn't say, yeah, we've overturned prior precedent, Clarence Thomas made clear in his concurrence, I believe, that that was his take on this. And whether or not they acknowledged it through the language of the Supreme Court ruling, effectively, this just rolled back 40 years of precedent, didn't it, Jim?
It did, including a decision issued by Sandra Day O'Connor about 20 years ago saying, you know what, you can, in fact, take a look at race when it comes to deciding who's going to be in your entering class. She said that. She also said, you know, maybe in about 25 years or so may come a time when we don't have to do that. The entire court, including Thomas, seizes on it and says, well, it's 23 years, not quite 25, and it's just about time. However, the larger issue here is, again, what do you think about the 14th Amendment? You've got a different view about what equal protection means. You've got the majority of the court, including Thomas, including the Chief Justice, saying that this is a colorblind portion of the Constitution. We don't look at race anymore. And that's what gets Ketanji Brown Jackson and Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan hair on fire, right? Because they look at this and say, wait a minute, the 14th Amendment was passed in the wake of what? The Civil War. We were emancipating blacks, new citizens. We were trying to raise their level of economics and culture and education, healthcare, all those kinds of things. And it was meant to be remedial in its focus. If today you're telling me that that purpose of the 14th Amendment is no longer here, that's ridiculous. And it also goes back to this longstanding view that John Roberts has had, that we are living in a country where we no longer need to be concerned about race. Talked about that in the voting rights cases as well, right?
Well, that's, I'm sorry to interrupt, Jim, but didn't they, this very same court with Roberts ruling for the majority, also wrote that Alabama effectively still has a problem with racial disparities,
right?
And deserved another congressional district.
Right. In the strongest language possible. They basically just condemned the Alabama legislature for drawing these lines as they did. It could not have been stronger. Again, you've also got Brett Kavanaugh siding on the side of the majority there and making that kind of comment. That was a surprise, I think, to many people, because the two previous major cases coming out of the Supreme Court were cases that basically eviscerated the Voting Rights Act. Section 2, before that, Sections 4 and 5, case called Shelby County, Brnovich out of Arizona. And we thought, many people thought, this was going to be the final nail in the coffin. It was not. And it came as a surprise. And maybe, just maybe, this was John Roberts and Brett Kavanaugh, and certainly the liberals as well, saying, you know what? Maybe we need to back off on this. We need to preserve something related to the Voting Rights Act to ensure that people know the Supreme Court is still here to have some involvement in this. It was a surprise, not inconsistent with the prior decisions to carve out portions of the Voting Rights Act, but certainly a clear statement that race does, in fact, matter in America in 2023. And getting back to your point, seems to be at least superficially inconsistent with this notion that when it comes to admissions, we don't need to be concerned about race anymore because we are in a, not the Chief Justice's word, but many other descriptions of what he said, in a post-racial America. We are not.
Folks, you're listening to The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, host of Morning Cannolis, Jim. But also, this other case, the lady who never made a website, yes, for somebody who, right, didn't ask her to, who, right, is married to a woman. I mean, how and then allows for discrimination against what? LGBTQ?
Right.
What? Individuals who want to come and, you know, buy goods and services in public. How does this even get that far?
It shouldn't get that far. And you identified the principal issue here that people are rolling their eyes about, not just scratching their heads. It has to do with standing. How many times have we talked about it,
right,
on this very broadcast, right? In order to bring something into court, you and I have got to have a case or controversy. We've got to be in disagreement with each other. There have got to be damages that we show that you've done something to me. I can say, you know what?
Is that the ripening? I hear the term ripening. Is it the damages that creates the ripening?
They're somewhat related. Once a case is ripe, it means that you've suffered some damages, right? So it's a little bit different language, but it's pretty darn close. Here, as you indicated, where is the standing? Colorado has not yet enforced this anti-discrimination law against her. She's not opened her business, as you just noted. The one fellow that they point to and say he was the one who was coming in says, I know nothing about this. I'm married to a woman. There are no damages here. What is the Supreme
damages
Court doing?
Damages seems like fraud to me, man.
It certainly does suggest that there's no basis for the Supreme Court to have decided this case. And it makes you wonder, are you plucking these cases up not because there is a case in controversy, but because you want to make points in America? That's the concern.
Bingo, counselor. Bingo. You're so insightful. He always is the insightful guest. He is James Santel, host of Morning Cannolis and bearing afternoon cannolis today. We appreciate it, Jim. Come back. More Jim Santel. Perhaps you on the phones. 844-96-PARTY.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
Consumers everywhere are rediscovering the benefits of buying locally produced food. Not only is it fresher, tastier, and more nutritious, it's also good for the local economy. And did you know the Village Hearth and Artisan Hearth hamburger and hot dog buns and rolls you love are baked right here in the Midwest? With the state-of-the-art bakeries and facilities throughout the Midwest, freshly baked buns and rolls are delivered fresh every day to your neighborhood grocers. Village Hearth and Artisan Hearth buns and rolls, locally baked, delivered fresh daily.
Flowers, vegetables, and crab apples, some of the first Marathon County Fair attractions, and showed us proof those crops could grow there. Started in 1868 by the Agricultural Society, the Wisconsin Valley Fair in Wausau began as a place to buy and sell those types of goods. Today, it's considered one of the best in the state, featuring displays, demos, and big-name entertainment included with the price of your ticket. The Wisconsin Valley Fair runs August 1st to the 6th in Wausau. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bond.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup.
Yes, that's awesome.
Starting at 6 AM, Up North News, 8 to 10, The Earl Ingram Show. Mondays, 8 to 9, Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crute. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show on 540 AM WAUK.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Kicking ass and taking names since the Wisconsin Uprising, the Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Phone lines open, 844-967-2789. Be patient, we will get to you. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, joining us. Jim, thank you for doing so. Before you came on the air, we're talking in the last hour, local topic here in Wisconsin. The naked bike race, promoting
positivity. Right?
There you go. Yes, you know, and you know, go biking against oil. You know, protesting big oil. Apparently, there was a 10-year-old involved. Her parent was there, and they were naked. And the Republicans here in the state of Wisconsin are losing their frickin' mind about it. The state investigated, said, "Well, there's nothing here. No crime was committed. It wasn't exploiting the child." But the Republicans go on and say they want the DOJ, they want the feds to now investigate, saying it's indecent exposure, it's immoral, it's harmful, it's obscene. Beyond those words, the legality of it, Jim. Well, I mean, I'm a big fan of naked, man, and if someone wants to be naked, I don't have a problem with it. Right. But what do the statutes say?
You know, does the word ridiculous come to mind when you think about this? I don't know if the statutes say anything, but it just doesn't apply, right? There's no criminal action here. There's nothing wrong here. You've got parents who are making decision appropriately about their children. That's what we do. We let parents make those judgment calls about the ways in which their children are involved in the world, school, friends, all kinds of things out there. This is one of them. I admit, we all acknowledge this may be a little bit closer to being on the edge, if you will, but nothing illegal about this, nothing criminal in nature about it. Is there a civil injunction here? What is the nature, again, the damages? What is what's going on here? You don't want to look at it?
Should the DOJ get involved?
Not at all, right? You know, this is not a basis. We've got limited resources, we know. How many other things in the state of Wisconsin do we need to investigate and pursue? This should be off everyone's agenda. If you don't like it, don't go. Don't attend. Don't read the news articles. And do other things that are important to you, right? This is not the kind of thing we should be spending any of our government resources, our time on. The Department of Justice has many, many other things that should be the focus of their attention, not this.
Well, and speaking of the Department of Justice, let's get to some of the Trump news today, Jim. CNN reporting, Trump's lawyers filed petitions attempting to throw out evidence collected last year by the special grand jury, banning prosecutors from presenting the material to the newly impaneled grand jury that has charging powers. Trump doesn't want him to see the evidence, and further disqualifying Willis, the DA, from any related proceedings. Lawyers for Trump say letting the investigation proceed would lead to, quote, a violation of his fundamental constitutional rights while he seeks his party's nomination for the presidency of the United States. Well, number one, Jim, I'm very busy, so I don't have time for your prosecution right now.
Right, absolutely right.
But what about them trying to throw all this evidence out?
I've just written the word ridiculous down in my page of paper here, and I'm going to answer that to all your questions now, apparently, the rest of the day. This is absurd. This, again, is not a last-ditch effort because they're going to continue to do this. This is an absurd attempt, once again, to try to stop things from happening. As to the motion, the petition to get Fani Willis thrown off, that's ridiculous. That's not going to happen. No judge is going to look at this and say she's done anything wrong. She's followed all the procedures. There's no basis for that. As to this other, again, it's not even arguably more meritorious request, the grand jury properly duly impaneled, the investigative grand jury produced its findings plainly, made some recommendations. We may find out as soon as next week when the indicting grand jury, already impaneled this past Tuesday, may return some charges here. All this is procedure. You file the motion in the hope that maybe you get sort of an Eileen Cannon situation out there. You get some judge who says, well, maybe there's something here. There's nothing here. But it's the attempt again by his lawyers to pull out all the stops to stop this, to delay this. There will be more in all of these cases, including coming out of Atlanta. And everybody who's looking at this, who's rational and reasonable and not ridiculous, is looking at this and saying,
it's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, exactly. As some people are commenting appropriately, it's an embarrassment, once again, quite literally, to the legal profession to argue about this, right? It truly is. And it may not be sanctionable in the literal sense that Rudy Giuliani and others are facing sanctions, but it's pretty darn close.
Is ridiculi the singular ridiculous? Just asking for a friend.
You talked about Judge Eileen Cannon, also Trump efforts there to continually delay. In fact, hell, delay it, you know, indefinitely, because as mentioned, I'm really busy running for president. I got to work. I mean, you know, CPAs don't get to, you know, put off their prosecutions for embezzlement just because it's tax season, Jim. So, but Eileen Cannon, you know, a loose cannon, perhaps. What do you think of the filing? What do you think of Jack Smith and DOJ's response to that filing, and how do you see Cannon reacting?
Right. And so Jack Smith once again has proposed a trial date in early December.
He keeps saying that.
Right, you know, and again, as you know, I've said I'll wait to see if that happens. That's 4 months from now, and we have not yet even seen all the motions there to suppress, to dismiss. Those have still got to be filed, some discovery disputes happening. We'll see whether that happens. And out of necessity, under the Speedy Trial Act, she may be compelled to do it, because Donald Trump says, I've got to go to the primaries and be a part of the caucuses here. If that is the basis for doing it, you've just carved out a brand new exception, if you will, to the Speedy Trial Act. It would be outrageous. I'd like to think that the Department of Justice would take that up promptly to the 11th Circuit once again and get a ruling slapping that down. So, my sense is that trial date will move, but not because we've got to accommodate a certain candidate.
Do you think Cannon will reject that?
I'd like to, if she's smart, she will, because it will lend legitimacy to other things that she would do, right?
Demonstrated that's not a quality she has, as you might see.
Well, right. She might be smart, but she's certainly, you know, crafty, helping Donald Trump, at least the last time around.
Let me take a crack at the counselor, our fine guest, Jim Santel. He is the host of Morning Cannoli Saturday, right here on the Civic Media Network, 9 to 11. Tune him in the morning. But I hear there might be a mole. I understand Jared Kushner has been compelled to testify before the Jack Smith and also perhaps even the first daughter, Ivanka. Mm-hmm. Is it possible they're the deep throats and they're turning states against the old man, Jim?
Could be in the grand jury in Washington. It's apparently active, looking again, not at Mar-a-Lago, but looking at your favorite thing, Mike, which is January 6th.
That's what I want to get to the bottom of. And it's not just Trump. It's potentially hundreds of Republican electeds, Jim, on the highest levels of the federal government.
And all those people, again, may well be on the names of files being held right now by Jack Smith. He's calling an awful lot of people in. Jared Kushner is the one who's at the top of the list, trying to figure out whether there's any time when Donald Trump looked at him and said, hey, I know that I lost this election. You remember this woman named Melissa Griffin who said that the president had said her to her?
Jim?
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
We'll be right back. Who said that the president...
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News on 540 AM WAUK.
CBS News brief. Special counsel Jack Smith is asking a federal judge to quickly issue a protective order after former President Donald Trump wrote on social media, "If you go after me, I'm coming after you." Loyola Law School professor Lori Levinson
sends a message to him that he should not be issuing implied or even indirect threats to people who could be witnesses in this case.
Two Orlando police officers were shot when they pulled over a car in connection with a murder in Miami. The suspect then fled, leading to a standoff at a hotel. Chief Eric Smith.
At 8:58, the suspect shot at our SWAT officers multiple times. SWAT officers returned fire, striking the suspect. The suspect is now deceased.
A Texas judge ruled the state's abortion law is too restrictive for women with pregnancy complications, granting a temporary injunction. But the attorney general's office quickly filed an appeal blocking that injunction. CBS News Brief, I'm Wendy Gillette.
If you care about animals or crops, you probably care how the weather could impact both.
It's summer in Wisconsin, and the success of your efforts often depends on knowing the forecast. Count on your local Civic Media weather team for all the information you need.
Crops' roots are also growing deeper in search for water, which is bad news because when rain finally falls, it will sit shallow and be absorbed in the top layers of the soil.
Your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the app.
She's the newest of seven elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. Janet Protasiewicz begins her 10-year term in August when she is sworn in. It's a longtime tradition which includes use of the court's seal created in 1848. But did you know it features the scales of justice, but not carried by a blindfolded Greek goddess? Instead, a hand holds the scales, representing justice is in human hands. It also means everything is official once the seal is stamped on any court documents. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr. Flowers, vegetables, and crab apples, some of the first Marathon County Fair attractions, and showed us proof those crops could grow there. Started in 1868 by the Agricultural Society, the Wisconsin Valley Fair in Wausau began as a place to buy and sell those types of goods. Today, it's considered one of the best in the state, featuring displays, demos, and big-name entertainment included with the price of your ticket. The Wisconsin Valley Fair runs August 1st to the 6th in Wausau. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup.
Yes, that's awesome.
Starting at 6 AM, Up North News, 8 to 10, The Earl Ingram Show. Mondays, 8 to 9, Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crute. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show on 540 AM WAUK.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I have Corrine Hendrickson, part of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed group.
We spend $500 on our infants and toddlers on average. If you go to the other countries, you're talking about $11,000 on average in Europe and the other developed countries. It makes a difference. They end up spending less on their K-12 system. They end up spending less on their colleges. They end up spending less on jail.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Weekday morning, 6 till 8.
On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Thank God it is Friday. Friday, doing it live. We're doing it live in the Shaw here. We're at the WAUK 540 AM studios. The Shaw, the Shaw. And we got a fine guest. He broadcasts here on Saturday mornings between 9 and 11. If you haven't tried the morning cannolis, oh, do indulge. And the fine host there of James Santel, former U.S. attorney, friend of ours. Jim, appreciate you sticking around.
I'm delighted to be with you, as always.
A little bit stuffy, steamy Friday afternoon. I have untucked counsel. I'm untucking.
It's time.
As we're going to break, I kind of shorted you. I apologize, Jim, but I asked you a question. There are so many that were in the inner orbit of Trump world. People like Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump And hell, the former chief of staff, the chief's chief, Mark Meadows.
Right.
And so many of these people have kind of fallen out of the public eye.
Jeffrey Clark, remember him from the Department of Justice, right?
Well, Eastman keeps popping up like a bad penny.
Right, right.
But most of them, or some of them, have gone sort of radio silent, Jim. And you wonder, if you were, let's say, crafting a plea deal with federal authorities and maybe giving quiet testimony to a grand jury, would that be the sort of conduct you might see represented? Or am I speculating here?
That's exactly the kind of thing. Not only getting advice from your attorney that during this period of time, we're talking to the department, we're talking to those prosecutors about ways in which you can be in a position down the road not to go to prison, perhaps this is not the time to be appearing on Fox News or CNN or any place, right? Or making any statements out there at all. Some advice plainly that our former president never understands and never appreciates. That's exactly right. The other telltale sign, of course, is if the other attorneys representing other defendants, potential defendants, targets in this case, suddenly they are no longer hearing from the attorneys for the Jared Kushner's.
No longer have a joint defense agreement.
Exactly, right, which are legitimate, they're illegal, and suddenly they go radio silent. That is a very strong indication. There's some cooperation here. We don't know exactly what's going on. But again, you look at somebody like Jared Kushner, who plainly was right there. The reason he's being called in is plainly to nail down this notion of what did Donald Trump actually believe? Did he actually believe that he had won the election or not? The reporting, of course, is that maybe he did say to the grand jury, no, I think my father-in-law really, really believes that. That may or may not be true.
But what it focuses on. How is it relevant, though? Right. I mean, if I believe all the money's in the bank is mine,
right.
Doesn't make it so. Doesn't justify my illegal behavior by going and taking it.
It does not. But what it does do is it puts in a future defendant's mouth and his voice and his brain criminal intent, right? Because what it means is when you're out there saying, you know what, I did in fact win this election, and I have the purpose of the future of the United States of America in mind when I called all these people in. I wanted them to, frankly, reverse the voting on these electoral ballots, if you will, because I honestly believed I won that. That's a very different thing. If in fact you can show in court that in at the same time you're saying that, you're also telling Jared Kushner, you know, this is all a fraud. I'm just saying this out there. That shows your criminal intent to do the acts that can be charged down the road. That's why that intent issue is so very important. And I suspect that's what Jack Smith is looking at with many, not all, but many of these
witnesses. We have seen public reporting that suggested the former president knew in real time.
Absolutely.
He knew. I mean, this was, if you believe the prior reporting I've read, right. This was the drunken suggestion of Rudy Giuliani on election night.
Right.
Just go out and claim and victory.
And say it's true, right? Well, we know that during the course of the House committee, the select committee, right, this woman named Alyssa Griffin testified that at some point right around that period of time, Donald Trump said to her, "Can you believe I lost to Joe Biden?" That is as close to a smoking gun as you can possibly get. That indicates that he did, in fact, understand that, and that all this that he was doing was a part of his intent to do something that's criminal in nature. That kind of statement is hugely compelling, not only for a grand jury, but also for a trial jury down the road.
And the other, you know, sort of Trump orbit person I've heard testimony, or at least I haven't heard any testimony, Jim, but I've heard giving testimony, Hope Hicks.
Yes.
Hopey. Right. That's got to hurt.
Right.
I mean, she was as close to Donald Trump as any of his aides, perhaps accepting the co-indicted NADA guy.
Right. But and my sense is that she also fairly early on either got some very good counsel who sat her down and said, listen, you got to be thinking about yourself, or came to the realization also that this is in her best interest. My sense from the very start was that this is not so. She certainly was loyal to Donald Trump, to the president, to the government generally, to the United States of America. Nobody doubts that kind of patriotism that she may have exhibited. But in the end, perhaps her attorney sat her down and said, you know what, there's a difference between that and engaging in criminal conduct. You have not been involved in that, perhaps, and you don't want to be brought into that sphere. You need to be straightforward with the prosecutors right now. Tell them what was said. Tell them about the conversations that you heard, that you were involved in. And if you do anything short of that, you are then going to be also drawn into this web. You're right now, you're outside of it. You can predict and you can craft your own future here if you do the right thing and tell them honestly what happened. You had a front row seat, as you just said, Mike.
Dominic, just want to confirm that the counselor had this one absolutely right. Alyssa Farah, a former White House aide, said a week after the election was called in favor of Biden, Trump was watching Biden on the television in the Oval Office and said, "Can you believe I lost to this effing guy?" In another clip of testimony from Cassidy Hutchinson, and she was a very impressive,
very compelling
witness, a top aide to the former Trump's chief of staff, Mark Meadows, she shared that Trump told Meadows, "I don't want people to know we lost, Mark. This is embarrassing. Figure it out." Well, they came up with some plans, didn't they, Jim?
They certainly did.
Figure it out.
Right. And whether those are on tape or not, you've got then witnesses, I think, about the trial, right? You call those people.
You've got multiple witnesses.
Right, you've got multiple, but you call them one after the other. And they all describe a certain different conversation. And one after the other, they all say, "I was not only in the room, I was talking to the president," now the defendant sitting at that front row table, "and this is what he said to me." And so it completely undermines his defense, if you will, that I truly believe that I had won that election, that I was doing this on behalf of the country. And it establishes once again your deceit, your fraud, your criminal intent. It really does, it's, depending upon the case is charged, you don't need to show that in every single type of element of the offense, but it certainly explains this to the jury as well. And it also sends a message to the American public about the reason why you're doing this. You've got a president who plainly is telling you things publicly that are completely contrary to what he honestly believes. The dishonesty there. Dishonesty in public life, regrettably, is not a crime.
Right.
But it does go to the reason why you're prosecuting, which is you want to hold your elected officials accountable for the crimes that they do. And that's why you're in court.
James Santel, former U.S. attorney, host of Morning Cannolis on Saturdays here on the Civic Media Network. Jim, the intent thing. Donald Trump was laying the seed corn, as it were, for almost a year before that election, in my opinion.
Yes.
Talking about the fraud and the mail-in ballots and how Republicans will never win another election if whole country went to a mail-in ballot kind of system. So I think that speaks to his mind a little bit. But let's talk about this a little further. If for some reason it is proven beyond a reasonable doubt that Donald Trump truly believed that he won the election, how does that change any of this?
It shouldn't, right? Because once again, the argument then in closing argument and opening statement is that belief a reasonable one, members of the jury, right? Is this something that somebody can look at and say, yes, that statement that he's making right now and is made for the year before the election, was that something that normal people can embrace? There's some wonderful jury instructions that say to juries, you don't check your common sense at the courthouse door. And this is one of those circumstances where, again, even if you don't go down this road, we know, and probably won't go into court, but we know 60 different times courts around this nation have found, yes, indeed, Joe Biden won the election. At some point, that position that, in fact, you won the election is preposterous. And a jury can make that, not just a jump, but make that determination that what you're doing, what you're saying here is simply meant as a false and frivolous defense to these claims against you that you engaged in a criminal conduct.
Devil's Advocates Radio Show, our fine guest in the Waukesha studios, he's James Santel. Jim, did you see any of the testimony on the Hill of Christopher Wray, the FBI director? Although to hear Republicans on the Hill describe it, he's some sort of bleeding heart liberal appointed by Obama, but that's not the case.
It is not
factually
the case. Right.
He's a Republican appointed by Donald Trump. This seemed sort of, you had to suspend your belief in fact to really sort of get into this fiction being peddled by these Republicans, Jim.
Absolutely. Bob Mueller is a Republican, right? Appointed U.S. attorney by a Republican president, served as a deputy attorney general, a Republican appointee through and through. So, again, these are these situations where just because someone has had an appointment or even a public allegiance to a particular party, they get into these roles appropriately. Roles of civil service, and they may not check it completely at the door for themselves, but their role is not to be partisan in nature. And for most part, they are not. Now, we've seen a Department of Justice that has been going down that.
Bill Barr.
Right. There you go. That's it. Right.
Did you ever share cannolis with Bill Barr, Jim?
I never did. Never did. Perhaps I should have done that many years ago, and things would have been different in American history. But your good point about Ray's presentation, I assume that the Republicans questioning him anticipated that Ray would get up there and say, well, yes, indeed, we're all jaundiced, we're all affected, we're all biased. That was never going to happen. And so it's a ridiculous thing to think about from the start. I thought Ray did a very good job of saying, you know what? We're not perfect. We've acknowledged that we made some mistakes. The FBI has always made some mistakes. Gosh, all of us have made mistakes in our lives.
They
right?
know.
Right?
Right? I mean, most of us, yes.
And I'd offer that that makes him even more credible, right? Even after the reports about the Russia investigation came out, went back and said, okay, we've got to make some fine-tuning here, some investigations. And he did those things. And he made the point overall that those are the exceptions and not the rule. The great number of special agents out there and the civil servants and even the political appointees in his office, those kinds of folks, they are not there. They're not there to pursue some sort of partisan agenda. Just the opposite. They go after the truth. And again, with understanding again, that the government is not perfect, can make mistakes. I think Christopher Wray, like others who have preceded him, is the right guy at the right time for that job.
You know, the vast majority of the crimes, as Wray pointed out in his testimony, mostly to Republicans as he pushed back, the vast majority of the people prosecuted or investigated and eventually prosecuted by the DOJ are sex offenders, are
absolutely
hardened right. criminals, are right. drug cartels. And right. it's only these couple of cases, be right. it Hunter Biden or be right. it Donald Trump, these high-profile political cases
that grab the headlines.
But right. Republicans are willing to throw out the entire agency, defund right. the FBI. The
yeah. right.
Call sign of these Republicans, Jim. I right. I hear some hollow echoes from the past.
Right, exactly. And they fail to understand that law enforcement is federal, it's state, it's local, it's county-based. All law enforcement is focused on those kinds of things. It's keeping us safe and secure. You get rid of the police, again, an imperfect set of agencies out there, like, again, all of them are, and you undermine that basic commitment to our on-the-street and in-home safety and security. That's what's, again, inconsistent with what the Republicans are doing when they're pursuing this avenue that somehow the FBI is again, in some way affected by politics and all this. It's again, ridiculous to use the word yet a third time today.
If you want more of this great testimony, and he is testifying, he is James Santel. He is the host of Morning Cannolis every Saturday morning, 9 to 11, or catch the replay or the podcast at civicmedia.us. Jim, I don't know if you know, Civic Media's got a big blood drive, and I guess we're not calling it a blood drive, but effectively, we're encouraging our audience to go out and give blood. So I did so yesterday at the Wisconsin State Capitol. And I would challenge you, Jim Santel, to challenge your audience and give some blood. And Dom, you're on the clock.
Right. The challenge is accepted. Here we go.
We are going to do this through the 31st of the month, the month of July. And actually, we're going to give some prizes, some tickets, some state fair tickets, some brewer tickets. So if you hashtag us, Civic Pints, plural, although I think you can only give one at a time. I offered several and they said, no, just one. One's fine. You will become eligible on the Civic Media social mediums. Jim Santel, thanks for coming around.
Always a pleasure, John.
And most importantly, sir, thanks for the cannolis.
Absolutely. Jeff. Every time I visit, cannolis.
Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. One more segment left for you today, 844-967-2789. Jim, I actually have a couple more questions, so if you'd be so patient, please stick around. Folks, we'll get your calls in, 844-96-PARTY.
The biannual blowout is just a week away, and we've got a lot of work to do.
Kenan's Rug Emporium is rolling out a Labor Day bonanza.
We have that flatweed shipment coming in.
He needs 10 new sales associates as the crowds loom large.
Can someone run a stock check on all the Moroccan 8x10s?
Indeed can help him hire great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. We instantly connect you with quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
She's the newest of seven elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. Janet Protasiewicz begins her 10-year term in August when she is sworn in. It's a longtime tradition which includes use of the court's seal created in 1848. But did you know it features the scales of justice, but not carried by a blindfolded Greek goddess? Instead, a hand holds the scales, representing justice is in human hands. It also means everything is official once the seal is stamped on any court documents. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
Flowers, vegetables, and crab apples, some of the first Marathon County Fair attractions, and showed us proof those crops could grow there. Started in 1868 by the Agricultural Society, the Wisconsin Valley Fair in Wausau began as a place to buy and sell those types of goods. Today, it's considered one of the best in the state, featuring displays, demos, and big-name entertainment included with the price of your ticket. The Wisconsin Valley Fair runs August 1st to the 6th in Wausau. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup.
Yes, that's awesome.
Starting at 6 AM, Up North News, 8 to 10, The Earl Ingram Show. Mondays, 8 to 9, Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Don McCrute. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show. On 540 AM WAUK.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
Warning, listening to the Devil's Advocates may expose you to opposing views.
And welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show, our last segment of the day, 844-967-2789. James Santel, host Morning Cannolis 9 to 11 on Saturdays. That's tomorrow, folks, here on the Civic Media Network. Sticking around. Thank you, Jim. I know we want to let you go and don't want to take up all your material for tomorrow, man, but Crudy doesn't do any homework today, so.
I want to move on to the cannolis. No offense to Jim.
He went and got a bite. A couple things I want to bring up and get your sense on. This U.S. think tank guy who the Republicans have put out there as some whistleblower, you know, knows something about the Hunter Biden and Joe Biden, the big guy and all that, is being charged by the DOJ for all sorts of things and, acting on behalf of a foreign government, those kinds of things. Jim, what's your sense of a gal Luft, the guy who's now being, apparently was charged in February, and he went missing, right? And the Republicans oh, he's very credible, da-da-da-da-da.
He is our witness. He's our guy.
Our guy. Now, already before he was our guy, he was already indicted. Now, that was not public.
Right.
But what does this do to the Hunter Biden case, in your opinion, sir?
It, again, indicates that the Republicans are looking for something that's not there. There's no there. You know, I always balk when people say that anybody who comes forward who disagrees with something inside the government is a whistleblower. A whistleblower is somebody who comes forward and says, you know what, I've got some unique view on something that the government does not know about, and I'm going to disclose it. Particularly when it comes to finances or something that's not known, that's a whistleblower, even under like the False Claims Act. Here you've got somebody who may have had some insight, some involvement in the investigation, probably a disgruntled employee for all the reasons you just indicated. Turns out he's been indicted for crimes that he may have committed. We don't know exactly when and under what circumstances, but he comes forward and he says, you know what? There was more of a case here than what was prosecuted. And I disagree with that. And for that reason, I'm coming forward and I'm going to tell all of you on Capitol Hill about this horrible thing that happened, this miscarriage of justice. I will tell you that as a part of the process, there are always disagreements inside prosecutors' offices. This is a part of the system. Over 30 years, there are many times when investigative agents came forward and said, you know what, Jim, I think we should charge this, that, in some ways. Sometimes we agree. Most often we agree. But not always, because the prosecutor is the one who makes the judgment call about how cases are charged, including here. And again, you've got a U.S. attorney under the Trump administration who made this call, says it's based upon the facts and the law. And this guy comes along and says, well, I disagree with that. And for that reason, we're going to take a look at this as if there's been some huge obstruction of justice here. Just the opposite. And then we've got these other issues about his very credibility. Is that relevant? You bet it is. When somebody who comes forward and says, I'm going to tell you something that's the truth, and it turns out that that very person is plainly engaged in criminal activity, all the more reason to doubt the veracity of what they're saying. Many, many problems with this. I could go on.
But the Republicans are still going to keep at it because they have nothing else to offer.
Absolutely.
And finally, Jim, of course, Jack Smith, ABC News reporting today, basically gave a target letter to a staffer of the Trump Organization in the classified documents case. What, saying he potentially was suspicious, a suspect of lying to investigators. So this is still going on, Jim. I mean, right? they charged it. It seems like old hat, old news now. What can you tell us about
right.
this?
Right. So again, this appears to be somebody, again, this is back to Mar-a-Lago again, right? A former or maybe a present Trump employee who probably got in front of the grand jury and lied about something, right? Probably if he had just been honest about it, he would not be facing the nomenclature of being a target. A target means likely you will be indicted. There are witnesses, there are subjects, and then there are targets. That's kind of the highest level that you can graduate to before becoming an indicted defendant. So this is Jack Smith basically advising his attorneys, you are in that category. We haven't yet asked the grand jury to return an indictment as to you, but probably here's the basis for that. We think you lied to the grand jury. It is coming. And maybe it's also something of an invitation to this fellow to come in finally and say, okay, you know, let's work together and perhaps work out some deal. Kind of a last chance letter, if it's that at all. But this is not good news, again, for that employee. Apparently even a low-level employee is what they're reporting.
Yeah.
So somebody really didn't have to go out and throw his body in front of the oncoming train, which is the prosecution here, and did it anyway.
So, well, I mean, again, the flooding of the server room. Kinds of things, you have to wonder. And also, apparently over the last several weeks, it's been reported that testimony has been given in the fraudulent electors.
Yes,
Arizona, right. Some folks, I mean, Nevada, maybe.
Right.
It seems like that's part of it. And of course, I know that's a big interest for the panel here.
Bob Spindell doing the out-of-state travel.
You know what I'm saying? So, Jim, do you think that also is growing as part of the investigation from Jack Smith based on the public knowledge we have?
Right. What are the challenges here that it's all the January 6th things? It is sprawling, right? It's like a major a movie out there. And again, the good thing about the electors situation, those are false electors, is that you can probably identify those with these particular kind of prosecution units, right? Whether it's here in Wisconsin and these other states, and say, this is what you did. You signed a document that said you're a properly appointed elector. That wasn't true. You indicated this is what was coming out of Wisconsin, these other states. That wasn't true. You knew it. And that's the reason why you're going to be indicted. I think that is going to be a part of the larger indictment when it comes forth. It's going to be one component of it because plenty of we've got these other tendrils out there as well.
What if they really, really, really believed Donald Trump won the election? Does that change anything, Jim?
And once again, the question is that belief reasonable? And what other things may have they said at the time to other people? If they went, as we saw in some of this reporting, if they went to their attorneys and said, you know what, I really feel uncomfortable about this. I know that I'm not an elector, and you want me to sign this? At some point, a jury can also look at that person and say, under what circumstances would a rational human being do that? If I come to you, Dom, and say, you know, I'm a lawyer, and I can tell you that every Tuesday afternoon from 1 to 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you can rob a bank. Are you going to say, well, Santel told me that. I relied on him. Is that a reasonable reliance? No, it is not. And so that can also be a part of the argument about their criminal complicity. A lot of those people probably also cooperating with the government right now and talking about what was told to them by people who organized this, including those folks in Wisconsin and other places who may have put this all together as a part of this larger scheme.
If the lawyer that said you could do it is been disbarred subsequently. Does that somehow undermine the advice they may have given, Counselor? I'm thinking of John Eastman and Rudy Giuliani.
Right. It's problematic, but only in the large sense of the word. We're always talking about the past, right? The fact that a lawyer was subsequently disbarred doesn't mean that the past didn't happen. Those facts are still presented in the course of the presentation to the grand jury and maybe one day to a trial jury as well. Fascinating to watch that at some point down the road.
Jim, you got a big show packed up for the morning cannolis tomorrow?
Lots of interesting things going on tomorrow. And who knows what happens between now and tomorrow morning right. 9 o'clock in the United States of America.
You know, you could do the Oprah-style salting of the show for tomorrow morning. A tease, if you will, Counselor.
We could. We're going to talk a little bit about the Supreme Court and kind of the residue that comes from all that. And then we're going to follow up again and do a little bit more deeper dive in some of the things we've talked about this very afternoon on this fine radio broadcast.
Deeper dive than right. this?
If it won't wreck your prep, I'll take you out to dinner, Counselor, because my understanding, Dom's going to Green Day.
Woo-hoo!
He's tipping
That's
us.
Got a good thing, right? Right?
Anastasia, thank you so much for producing us out of the WAUK 540 AM studios, the Shaw 101.1 FM. Don't forget the morning cannolis tomorrow between 9 and 11 on all the Civic Media stations you can hear me on. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Thank you, Jim.
Take care, everybody.
God. Did you know the Wisconsin State Fair is 172 years old? It still celebrates the industries important to our state's history, like agriculture. But every year, new attractions and items are added. This year, there's more than 100 new foods to try. So what do you think topped the culinary list last year? Flamin' hot Cheetos chicken on a stick? Deep-fried old-fashioned? Or Pino pretzel popper brat? The answer's coming up. The Wisconsin State Fair didn't start in its current home of West Allis. The first was in Janesville along the Rock River, then moved to different locations the next 40 years. The original cream puff has been around almost as long, close to 400,000 are gobbled up every year. So which food was number one last year? It was the Pino pretzel popper brat. It came out on top. The State Fair is a true slice of Wisconsin, and it runs through August 13th. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Walker.